In the years leading up to the Civil War, tensions over slavery and how various states dealt with issues relating to it were bubbling up. In 1848, those tensions surfaced in Delaware as Thomas Garrett, an outspoken advocate for the rights of African Americans, was standing trial at the Newcastle courthouse. It was a federal case, with two slave owners claiming Garrett, with the help of first state farmer John Hunn, assisted their runaway slaves in reaching freedom in Philadelphia.
The amount of help they gave was pretty minimal, and the fines were very severe. So this nexus of these two elements made these people nationally famous in the abolition community.
That's Robin Crawitz, president of the Underground Coalition of Delaware. John Hunn entered a guilty plea, paid a hefty fine, and escaped a trial, but not Thomas Garrett.
Mr. Garrett, on the other hand, he sees this trial as a soapbox. He wants the trial.
That's Brian Cannon, lead interpreter for the Newcastle Courthouse Museum. Cannon says this wasn't the first time Mr. Garrett had helped runaway slaves, or for that matter, been charged with helping them escape. At this point, he'd already been convicted of helping slaves in Maryland. This case also involved a slave family living in Maryland, with members of the Hawkins family owned by two different slave owners, a Mrs. Turner and a Mr. Glanding.
What people don't appreciate is the complexity of some slaves' lives. The Hawkins family is an excellent example of this. Sam's a free man. He's a sharecropper. He rents a farm. And Mrs. Turner is a widow. She does not necessarily need Emmeline around the house all the time. So she allows Emmeline and the four younger children to live with Sam on his farm, which is near Ingleside. Anytime that Mrs. Turner needs them, she sends for them. They come back. They work a day or whatever length of time Mrs. Turner might need them, and they are allowed to go back and spend time with their husband and their father. The two older boys, owned by Glanding, are living a little bit farther away from Ingleside. They don't get to live with the rest of their family, but I'm sure that they see each other. It's a small community. Even today, Ingleside's still there. It's a little small town. Kind of a unique situation. You don't picture slaves being allowed to go live with a free man on a farm away from their owner.
Sam Hawkins tried to purchase the freedom of his enslaved family members, but his request was denied. To keep the family together, he requests help from the Delaware Underground Railroad.
And Ingleside is about 50 miles south of the border with Pennsylvania. So Sam and Emmeline and the kids are 50 miles from freedom. As far as they're concerned, that might as well be the other side of the moon.
With the help of Samuel Burris, a free black man and conductor on the Underground Railroad, the family made their way to Delaware by the way of John Hunn's farm. While at the Hunn farm, the family was discovered, arrested, and taken to the constable's office in Middletown, and then sent on to jail in Newcastle. Meanwhile, while officials were working to sort out the legal paperwork required to hold the family in jail, the local sheriff alerted Thomas Garrett.
The sheriff sends a note to Thomas Garrett 5 miles up the road in Wilmington. And we don't know what the note said, but we could anticipate that it probably says something like, hello, Mr. Garrett, hopes all is well with you, you get a chance, good to see you if you come down here to Newcastle. By the way, we've got a couple of packages for you down here at the courthouse, but of course what it is, it's a code. When he says to Mr. Garrett, I have a package for you, that package is a runaway slave.
Garrett managed to pull off some fancy legal footwork with the help of the Chief Justice for the state of Delaware, Judge James Booth. He requested of Judge Booth a writ of habeas corpus, alleging the family was being held unlawfully. Sam was a free black man, and Emmeline had some form of a manumission document confirming the act of a slave owner freeing one slave.
He probably could have found some way to ask questions about this. But he doesn't want to because he wants to help the family and legally do it.
And as for the two sons owned by Mr. Glanding,
Delaware had a unique law. This law says that a black person walking down the street is presumed to be free unless the authorities have suspicions to suspect otherwise.
And with that, the Hawkins family was set free and escaped to Pennsylvania by way of the Garrett's North Wilmington residence. But soon after, the family's slave owners came knocking. They sued based on the 1793 Fugitive Slave Act.
The original slave law basically says that a runaway slave, even if they're in New England or Ohio, they're still a runaway slave. And people, citizens of those states, are incumbent upon them to catch those people and return them to slavery.
In 1848, the year of Garrett's trial, slavery wasn't that common in northern Delaware.
The main purpose of slavery was the economic factor, being able to grow rice and cotton and those type of products. Delaware early on realized this is not an area for cotton, it's not an area for good tobacco. So we start to go with corn and wheat and raising cows and horses. You don't need a slave population for that.
But slave owners from South and Central Delaware were called to sit on the jury. Judge Roger Taney, who at the time was serving as a Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, presided over the case. A slave owner himself, Taney and the jury ruled in favor of the slave owners. The case set the precedent for the Fugitive Slave Law of 1850 2 years later, which reinforced the 1793 Fugitive Slave Act and made it stronger. Taney also presided over the 1857 Dred Scott decision, virtually stripping away all rights for blacks, both slaves and free men. Crowitz says these series of cases, worsening conditions for African Americans, all pushed the country closer to the Civil War.
When we talk about states' rights, what was the right that the South wanted? It was to hold enslaved people. So it's about slavery. And so this just ratcheted up the heat. It's like having a pot of water and you crank up the heat a little bit on that burner and all of a sudden you got it roiling. And that's part of what was going on at the time, moving us towards the Civil War.
In the trial of 1848, Thomas Garrett lost everything, just managing to escape a jail sentence after scrounging up over $5,000.
To say they threw the book at them is really what happened. And so these people who were prominent from wealthy families lost virtually every penny they had to pay the fines.
But even after his trial, Thomas Garrett vowed to redouble his efforts to help slaves. While researching the Newcastle Courthouse's current exhibit about Garrett and his trial, Cannon said he and others were able to confirm at least 2,700 accounts of Garrett directly helping men, women, and children escape to freedom. And Cannon adds that number is probably low, since Mr. Garrett didn't keep a master list of those he helped. But Cannon is pretty sure he knows why Mr. Garrett got into it in the first place.
This whole idea of having a young black girl in his household, or his family's household, kidnapped, was enough to make him realize that there's just not, it's not this whole idea of slavery is where it's wrong, because you can, it's not only dealing with the slaves, but free blacks stand at risk. So even if you accept the idea that slavery is okay, now you've got to accept the idea that any black person can be kidnapped from Massachusetts or Delaware or any place else and sold into slavery somewhere else. And this whole idea, I think, is really kind of what changes his moral compass, if you will.
When blacks gained the right to vote through the 15th Amendment in 1870, Garrett was carried on the shoulders of black supporters through the streets of Wilmington, hailing him their Moses.
That's what makes a hero, I think, is people who are willing to put themselves on the line for others.
A legacy that's still celebrated today in the first state. For Delaware Public Media, I'm Megan Pauley.